This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's that time. Your fix is here. College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's J.C. and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and J.C. Sherbert of 24/7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
Welcome, everybody, to another installment of J.C. and Morgan. He is the venerable one, J.C. Sherbert, donning a Chicago Bears toboggan because he just has that type of moxie about him. He's not afraid to represent a once proud franchise.
Mediocrity and frustration. Yeah, so definitely.
They still have the number one pick, folks, and they can't unload Justin Fields. So Caleb Williams, come on down. Let's platoon over there in Chicago. Who knows how that's going to work out with the NFL draft inching closer. It's such a great time of year. Oh, by the way, I'm Mike Morgan. I'm here in Atlanta. JC's in Chicago. I forgot what number installment this is of JC and Morgan. Maybe our fearless producer, Phil Mullinax, can update us on that. I know we're getting up there, and we've got another great guest coming to you. We had Ross Dellinger on last week. We'll have Dan Wetzel on. We've never had Dan on. Dan is, I'm pretty sure, we'll double check with him on this, is the guy mainly responsible for breaking the Jim Harbaugh story, among other things. He's also a best-selling author, wrote Death to the BCS. He does a podcast with Ross called The College Football Inquirer. And I think for a while now has done just outstanding work. He's strong opinions. I don't agree with all of his opinions, but that's what makes it fun. It'd be boring if we had nothing but guests on that have the same opinions that we do. So we'll have him on here shortly. We normally would do this earlier in the week. Here we are. It's like a news dump Friday. But the great thing is about the show, you can listen, watch whenever you want on all the major platforms from YouTube to Spotify and everything in between. I will once again fall on the sword for the change of day. Basketball schedule has kept me on the road. I just finished, JC, a 9-day three-game road trip living out of a suitcase from Fayetteville to Baton Rouge to Pensacola for the Sun Belt Championship. Congratulations to James Madison winning that, their 31st win of the year, more than any other team in college basketball. We don't talk a ton of college hoops on here, not because we don't love college basketball. You're listening to two guys who love it and are all in on March Madness. We will get into some more than normal. It's just we always want to maintain our focus. You guys know that we talk college football year-round. That's why you're here. But I don't know many college football fans, JC, that don't also love March Madness. It's such a great event, and it never disappoints. And now it's becoming similar to college football in that major news stories all happen toward the end of the season. Like, coaches are getting fired just left and right. Pew, 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 pew. And then contract extensions are being signed left and right to avoid their coaches being poached by other schools. choom, 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 just like you can't even keep up. You get whiplash following the tickers to try to keep up with all of it. You got that going on. You got Champ Week going on. You got a great SEC tournament in Nashville going on. You're there. You were there. Are you back in Chicago now? I can't keep up.
Actually, I was going to let it ride and just pretend like I was. You know, I'm actually in Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, you're in Greenville. You're everywhere, man.
Like our producer's house. I'm with the Mad Dog.
Look at you guys.
I rolled in. It's a long drive. Nashville's about halfway down, so I don't have to.
Okay.
You know, I'll be in Studio South for the next week. I'll be back by the start of March Madness. But Nashville's about halfway if you go that way. And so it just lined up where I could go watch a game there. And I left the town right afterward. Stopped in Calhoun, Georgia, near the Buckies. got up early this morning and buzzed on over to South Carolina. I'm going to stay here the next couple of days. But, yeah, it's I have not had a road trip like your nine-day journey through the South. But,
yes.
You know, being on the road, it was kind of fun. Really taken aback by – and we talked about this on the show before. You guys can find it in our archives, but about Nashville and the growth and – all that is something. I left 9 years ago, and it's unrecognizable. But had a good time at the tournament. That's a good event. The game I was at, Arkansas and South Carolina, you kind of spread out, you know, and still a lot of Hog fans there. They still travel well, as you know. But, you know, kind of wish you were there, dude. I was like, well, you know, Mike was all calling all these other games. I was like,
yeah,
he'd probably have a good time. But
I love it. Everybody knows my famous SEC tournament story by now. They only send two announcing crews. When they sent a third, I was the third and was about to do a doubleheader with Jimmy Dykes, and that's when COVID hit, literally an hour before tip-off between Tennessee and Alabama. The second game, ironically enough, was going to be Florida-Georgia, who played last night at another thriller. Georgia playing Florida close, and then they just
poor Mike White,
you know, keep losing. Won't. Yeah, well, don't feel too. He's got talent coming next year,
And they're young too. Bro, they're just good young players, I think.
They got a couple good freshmen, and they're gonna hit the portal, but they got two like top 50 recruits. Again, not to get too in the weeds on basketball, but I'll tell you this: I've said it many times because I know we have a ton of SEC fans that listen, and sometimes basketball is a lot like baseball or women's basketball because we all love college football. I always make the analogy, you go to the buffet, you only have so much room. You get one plate for us, okay? And you can only fit so much. So your number one course, you're filling up half that plate, if not more, with football. College football, pro football, 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 football. We are a football-driven society. You look at the ratings. The top 100 things rated last year, 97 of the 100 were football. Most of those were NFL and a few college. And then there's a drop-off. But when your team is doing well or the league you like is doing well, you get immersed in a sport that maybe you don't always follow. Now, a lot of my friends are hoop heads. I mean, they've loved college basketball since they were knee-high to a grasshopper. But some of the fringe fans, I realize you only get into it when your team is doing well. Well, the SEC is having a landmark stretch here, and it's not going back. I keep reminding people of this. In addition to adding Texas and Oklahoma, just the coaching is too good. The players are now too good. The SEC has supplanted the ACC in many ways. Why is that? So much is said about the money and the coaching. That's true, but all you have to do is look at recruiting, JC, something you know a thing or two about, particularly in football. And the top 100 kids, the majority are going to the SEC over the ACC. It never used to be that way, ever, ever, never, ever. So that is the trend. It would be like – it's got to burn ACC fans. It would be like if all of a sudden the Big 12 was getting all the top football recruits and you're the SEC, like, what the hell just happened? What? But that's our five-star guy. That's what's been happening in basketball.
You've had some turnover in that league, you know, in the last, five, 6 years, Rick Pitino, Jim Boeheim, Roy Williams, Mike Krzyzewski all walk out that door, you know, Leonard Hamilton's not far behind them, Jim Larranega at Miami, how old is he now, you know?
Oh, gosh, 70s.
you know, Wake Forest finally figures it out after the tragic death of Skip Prosser threw them off. You know, Dave Odom took them so far, then Skip Prosser had them going, and he unfortunately passed away. They finally got a guy in Forbes that's got them moving. NC State stuck in the abyss under their coach. Maryland's out of the conference. You know, Virginia, this is a down year for them, but they're usually pretty solid. So you just keep going. You know, Pitt's good this year, and Capel's done a good job there getting them out of the abyss. But, you know, Notre Dame, just Mike Bray is no longer the coach there. They hired the guy from Penn State who's going to be good, but they haven't one of those, you know, transition years. So that league's in flux, whereas the SEC a few years ago decided they're going to start investing in the sport, and that's the one thing they have is money. And look at all the coaches that have come to the league. Mm-hmm. And taking jobs, Mike, I mean, they're getting paid, and I think they
can compete now. Like they're not going to lose anymore. There was a time where I would dare say that the SEC could be a stepping stone to other jobs in other leagues in basketball. That's not anywhere near the case now. You know, I mean, and there's rumors about Musselman leaving. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. But for the most part, like, Cal's not leaving Kentucky. Barnes is not leaving Tennessee. South Carolina just re-upped Lamont Paris. Florida just re-upped Todd Golden. Ole Miss just re-upped Coach Beard. You know, these are all coaches that are in high, high demand. There were rumors about Paris going to Ohio State. Beard could go anywhere he wants. Todd Golden, if they make a tournament run in Gainesville this year, that's a coach that could be courted by other schools. But they're not going anywhere.
Because Todd Golden, yeah, West Coast, Washington just opened. So for
example, right.
And they've got Big Ten money, or half of it at least now. And I heard you talk on another show yesterday while I was in the car driving to Nashville. You sounded great, Mike, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
You said there's probably not going to be anybody on the hot seat next year in the SEC either. And yeah,
I don't see it.
In a world where everybody's quick to want to fire coaches, right? They want to fire them. And look, there's some guys that deserve to be fired. Kenny Payne, that was obviously a disaster relative to their standards. But, you know, and unfortunately, because he's a Cardinal, and I mean, it was a great
story. And a great
story guy,
and
It sucked. But, you know, in this world where we're quick to fire coaches, stability is usually the one thing that gives you success. I mean, you look and, whereas there's no Frank Beamers where you can win two games of football your fifth year and keep your job, schools that stick with coaches more than the average, you know, if they have resources and that coach kind of knows what he's doing, they tend to have success. I mean, it's, and some schools have success in spite of it. Tennessee basketball is an example. How many coaches they go through, and they finally got another good one, and there's no scandal or anything running them off. So, so look at them. But, you know, I think you're right. I mean, who in the SEC would be on the hot seat next year? Vandy's already open. You know, Dennis Gates probably can't go 0-19 in the league again. But, I mean,
they won't.
It shows us. I mean, yeah, he's recruiting well and stuff.
They got their class coming in.
That was weird. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens moving forward. But I thought that was a very smart point you made, is that, you know, this league in basketball is on very solid ground. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. And here we go, because I believe we've got Dan Wetzel ready to go. So let's do this. Take a quick timeout. We'll come back. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports will join us, and we'll get into a whole lot of good stuff. Mike Morgan, J.C. Sherbert. It's J.C. and Morgan.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Listen up. This is for construction professionals, contractors, facility managers, or do-it-yourself homeowners. SitePro Rentals is ready to equip your upcoming project. We rent construction equipment for any size job. Boom and scissor lifts, telehandlers, skid steers, excavators, air compressors, generators, even small tools and equipment. SitePro has you covered. If you are ready for better equipment rental, call SitePro and rent from the local, friendly, easy-to-do-business-with equipment professionals. Call 972-RENT now. That's 972-736-8669 to rent the newest equipment in the Atlanta market. Call 972-RENT now or visit siteprorentals.com.
Chicken cock originated in Kentucky, like so many other bourbons. And so the resurrection of it, you know, Paris, Kentucky, that's the county seat of Bourbon County. So much of this whiskey was being made in that Bourbon County, put on ships and barges and shipped down Ohio, down the Mississippi, and got to New Orleans where it got distributed all over the world. And people kept saying, well, hey, I want some more of that whiskey from Bourbon County. And so that's how bourbon whiskey got its name. And chicken cock originated actually in Paris, Kentucky, which is today Bourbon County.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
All right, we welcome you back. It is JC and Morgan. We've been very guest heavy here this time of year. It's the one advantage of the off season. We have more time to really have some guests and people we respect. Last year, you might remember, it was kind of our quarterback derby. A lot of former quarterbacks back to back to back. And now we're kind of going I would call it a murderer's row of people that cover the sport nationally. We had Ross Dellinger on. We'll have Andy Staples on. We'll have Pete Thamel on. This is a guy that we haven't had on. Oh, I've always admired his work. He's with Yahoo Sports. You might know him from the podcast College Football Inquirer, best-selling author. Death to the BCS might be my favorite title of a book of all time, and also as somebody who also despised it for 20 years, a fan of that. He's Dan Wetzel, and he joins us now. Dan, how are you?
I'm great after that nice introduction. Thank you very much. Happy to be on.
Oh no, it comes from a spot of sincerity for sure, and I know we've never spoken. I don't think we've ever crossed paths. We certainly know a lot of the same people. I was trying to think of where to start this, and I've spent my whole life in electronic media, talk shows and calling games and whatnot. I know you dabble in that obviously, but I've always wanted to ask like guys like you and Ross. You guys are, I think of you guys as breaking a lot of stories. I know you also, you know, you're a columnist, so that might not be your number one thing. But when you're on the hunt for a story, whether it's Jim Harbaugh's or something involving the college football playoff, how do you guys get together at Yahoo and SI and the other places that you've been associated with? How do you guys get together and kind of say, okay, well, this is mine, this is yours, you follow this lead, you follow that lead? I don't know. Do you have an assignment editor like the newspaper business used to be? How do you siphon that off?
You do have editors. We do have an editor, but generally editors aren't, you know, when it comes to breaking news, it's on the reporters. We're the ones that are talking on a daily basis with people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to turn this into journalism class, but you know, you need to work. I wouldn't even call them sources. They're just people you know that you talk to all the time. Mm-hmm. And you stay in contact. You can't just call someone up and go, you know, did you do it? You know, and I don't know, whatever. Are you leaving? And they answer. Like, that doesn't really work. You need to, like, have some type of communication, line of communication or relationship with the person all year round for years. Mm-hmm. And so when something's up with, like, Frost and I are working on, you know, Connor Stallions in Michigan or conference realignment or whatever, you know, you have different strengths and different people. So maybe you know, we'll talk and say, hey, I'm hearing this. What can you find? And then each person makes some calls and get a little info back. And you want to try to surround the story. You don't want to just be with one person says, you know, some crazy thing like, you know, the Big Ten will have four West Coast teams and you go, no way possible. Right. You gotta try to do it all that. So it's a lot of just working together with someone. Ross Dellinger's, absolutely phenomenal. We've had a lot of great reporters at Yahoo through the years and in all different sports.
Is the Connor Stallion, Jim Harbaugh story, because I mean, I saw you on Dan Patrick's show, a number of shows having to talk about that. Is that the wildest and craziest story that you've been involved in?
I don't know if it's the wildest and craziest, but it was certainly wild and crazy. There was also an element, a lot of times on a story like that, because it was like a crime story. It just broke. Nobody knew about it. And so it was like, it's almost like there was a crime committed, but the beauty of the Connor Stallions case is there wasn't a crime committed. So it was kind of fun. Like a lot of times, you know, it's like there's a murder, you know, or there's an assault, like there's a victim, right? This was like, Nebraska's offense was the victim. Okay, he wasn't doing a whole lot anyway. You know, the reason Michigan won the title, they had 18 guys at the combine. I think that might play a more of a thing than Connor Stallions. But it was like a whodunit, but there wasn't really anything negative. And that was kind of refreshing. I mean, I've covered some horrific, horrific stories in college, you know, Sandusky, Nassar, things like that, where you're just like heart-wrenching on a day, and just awful. You feel awful at the end of the day. This was fun. This was fairly entertaining. What the heck is going on? This guy, you know, he got his buddies to film sidelines. What is this? So it was a wild one, and no one knew what was going on. I mean, look, we will see, but having worked that story for months, I do not believe that many people, if any, above Connor Stallions knew what Connor Stallions was doing. He was a Marine captain. He went to the Naval Academy. He was not sharing secrets. So it was not a widespread conspiracy. But at Michigan, it was like nobody knew what was happening. And everyone's looking around like, did you know? Did you know? Was this going to go all the way to Harbaugh? Was this going to go to the coordinators? What was happening? I think it was fairly contained in the end is my guess. I guess we'll see if there's ever an NCAA investigation or more comes out on it, or everyone's just sort of moved on to the next thing.
Yeah, thankfully this wasn't one where you were like, waiting on DNA tests for the lab. You obviously have had more morbid things to cover. This was just like, it almost felt like a gag. Like we were all being punked on that whole thing. And I guess we'll never know the answer to this, Dan, but I'm just curious if Harbaugh didn't bolt for the NFL and he stuck it out. Like, what was that going to look like? What were they going to do?
Probably suspend him for some more games, maybe like three more games, four. I don't know. I mean, he was kind of building up to lifetime achievement status with the NCAA. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of and Jim's things were always like ridiculous. I don't root for one team or another. I don't root for one coach or another. I root for people to give me content. And I am going to miss Jim Harbaugh. I miss Urban Meyer also, right? I like those kind of – give me that. I don't need just some dull guy. So he had a lot – it was a lot with Jim Harbaugh. There was always something going on with Jim Harbaugh. I think they probably were going to suspend him for not having control over his staff. And that you know, I mean, they already suspended him 3 games. He also was suspended for 3 earlier in the year. I guess you could hit him again for some more. But I don't, you know, I'll give you, I know this is what you asked, but I think it's an interesting point. I know you guys are, you know, very heavy college sports audience here. And I don't know what the NCAA can even punish anyone for anymore. They can, there are rules. And like, this would be this is a non-NIL thing, right? Like this is a violation. You could be sending your buddies to film it. Okay. But how do you punish a team? So let's say Michigan this has never been adjudicated, so we won't say Michigan's guilty. But let's say Team X did this. They had another guy, right? Stoner Callions was on a staff somewhere and did this. And they go through this. And but like, how do you punish a team? The NCAA punishments that we think of that are devastating no longer really apply based on how we build rosters anymore. Scholarship limitations, NIL can make a walk on a scholarship guy. Number of recruiting visits you could bring in. Again, NIL can do that. How do kids choose schools? It's a different process. You can't really hammer a school anymore. You can suspend the coach, but that's about it.
Well, Dan, though, if they proved it and it gave them a strategic advantage in a game, they could make them forfeit, couldn't you?
They
could
vacate.
Make it vacate. Oh, no, they God, don't the have vacating.
They don't have a forfeit. So you can vacate. That would be a little bit of embarrassment, but I don't know.
Vacating after the fact.
They don't want to ban people from postseasons anymore. I just think the NCAA as itself is in a box because their rules, their punishments, right, which were effective in limiting programs in the past, no longer – they were built for 5 years ago. I don't know that they're built from now to 5 years. I think you can get around scholarship reductions and recruiting sanctions.
Well,
it's a side argument. You know what
I mean? Yeah, I mean, they've never had subpoena power, but they've still been able to prosecute in their own way. But I think now it's Keystone Cops because the Tennessee case to me was very significant because that basically – they clearly felt like they had Tennessee caught red-handed on some recruiting violations. And now it almost feels like, and we'll get into this bigger topic, which is the SEC and the Big Ten ruling over the entire college sports landscape from this point forward. It just seems like the moment the NCAA wants to do what they were actually kind of invented to do, that and being an event planner for the other 88 championship sports, they now are they got the worst winning percentage in the courtroom, probably anybody that we know. And the SEC and Big Ten is clearly joining forces to where they're saying, look, we're going to do this with you or without you. And so if you try to kind of play that game you've been playing where you suspend players and you suspend teams and you put programs on probation, we have other ideas in mind. And I don't know how they're going to change that. I just don't see them having the power to do that right now.
Agree. And you take the case in where the state of Tennessee – and the state of Commonwealth of Virginia sue in federal court. And if you look at their track record at the Supreme Court, where any federal lawsuit would eventually could end up, and you look at the concurring opinion of Brett Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh from 3 years ago in the Alston case, if you ever want to read that thing, just look it up. It's well written. It's very interesting. And he's basically like, you guys are in violation of the – this is not a case about the Sherman Antitrust Act. But you guys are in violation of that. And if that case comes to me, I don't like it's just a warning shot of like, don't even try me. And so the NCAA has very little to go. So when you have an alignment like Tennessee, which was terrific, handled it terrifically with the school, the administration of the school and the state. Yeah, there isn't a whole lot there. So I don't think there's a lot of power. But even on cases that I think everyone would say, this is a violation, right? Like if you can't film the sidelines. You can't film the sidelines. That has nothing to do with should we pay this guy? Was this guy paid this way, that way, all that. Like, you have to have rules in a sport, right? I mean, like, the NFL has rules like this. You know, you can't meet with a free agent until this date, right? Mm-hmm. So that, and Harbaugh broke that rule. Like, some of those rules that are just basic rules no one would argue with, you have to have a calendar. Even if you're caught, I don't know what the punishment is that would deter you anymore. So the NCAA is just in a really oddball spot. They're on their heels, and the way society thinks and the way recruiting and roster construction works has gone at warp speed, and they're standing around going, I'm going to ticket your horse and buggy. You're not gonna be able to ride in your horse and buggy because I saw you speeding by in your car.
You crazy kids.
No problem.
So if I'm reading what you've written correctly, and Ross might have even mentioned you indirectly on this, talking about he's more of a guardrail guy than you are, let's just say.
I'm a no guardrail guy.
You're a no guardrail guy. Okay. You know, this is the great thing about formats like this. Reasonable people can disagree on that. So I've never been against athlete compensation, but I do think where we are now, in talking to a ton of coaches in both major sports, it's a little messy, to say the least. I listened to a Nick Saban, and I want to get your thoughts on all that Nick is saying. And I get it. A lot of people are going to say he is get off my lawn guy now on his retirement tour. But don't you see something having to be done, not limiting compensation, but at least, like you mentioned, the NFL, it's not an antitrust violation to make sure that you honor contracts and you don't tamper with free, you know, players under contract, et cetera, et cetera. We have none of that now. It is truly anarchy when it comes to all that type of format. So what would you like to see, if anything, be done to improve the current situation?
So it's not necessarily I'd like it, but I mean, the reason the NFL can do all that is because their players are employees. So
right.
The solution, I'm not saying I like it or this is how I would do it, but this is what's going to happen. And again, go read Brett Kavanaugh. It ain't about me, it ain't about Nick Saban, it ain't about anybody else. It's about Brett Kavanaugh, really. Mm. You know, if you make them employees, then you can sign them a contract. You can limit all. That's the whole thing. Is you can't look, if you're volunteering at the animal shelter every Saturday morning, and you volunteer over there, and then one day someone says, "Hey man, they got free bagels if you volunteer over the soup kitchen," and so you go over the soup kitchen because you want a free bagel. The animal shelter can't say you can't do that. You've been volunteering here. Now, if you're an employee at one, you can't leave your job, right? So some of this is like, that's how the court sees it, whether we see it that way, all that, but that's how they see it. And I'm just trying to be realistic. A lot of what these guys were talking about with guardrails was we want to say we don't have the same system that we had before, but we basically want to have the same system. And I'm like, these guardrails are never going to work. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be able to enforce them. You're never going to be able to investigate them. And quite honestly, if you look at the Tennessee case, sure, done. They can't do it. I thought the entire guardrail bit was a waste of time. And they've spent years now focused on how can I keep what I wanted. I understand it is harder for coaches. I understand it is a bigger headache for coaches. I understand all of that. If I was a head coach, I would not like any of that. I would like that my salary is now millions and millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. The salaries go up for all these guys. So this broken industry is a pretty good one to be in. Everyone's industry and life changes. Everybody's, you hang around a job for 50 years. Like Nick Saban's like, well, I've been here 50 years and now it's different. Whose job has not changed in 50 years? Whose industry? Who hasn't had a disruption and stuff? So some of this stuff is just what happens. And so my thing with the guardrails, the lack of guardrails, until you get serious and say, these guys are going to be employees, we're going to have contracts. We may even allow a union, which would be extremely weak to form, or we're going to get onto the real stuff. I'm no guardrails. Let the free market play out. If some school mm-hmm. wants to try to spend $50 million to buy a team, let them. We'll see if it works. Probably won't. If you listen to the early crying and wailing, it was all
the rich will get richer. The Alabama will get all the players, you know, all this stuff. College football at that top 30 level is more competitive now than it was before. It wasn't competitive at all for like 10 years there.
Mm-hmm.
When it's no longer about your facilities and your proximity to talent, when a school like a Michigan, I mean, we're hardly talking about a plucky underdog here, but they were non-competitive on the national basis for really one season out of the last like 60. They were able to keep their players. Like if you look, there's more parity now at the top. Look at this college basketball tournament. It's wide open. Duke's got 7-8 losses. Kansas got 8 losses. Like last year, FAU and San Diego State played in a Final Four. Like all the stuff, if you let the free market play out, I'm just a free market guy. And maybe it's just my sensibilities. I'm just a free market guy in life. Let them all compete and see what happens. It hasn't gone at all like they warned us it would go. And so That's why I don't really see the need other than it's more work for coaches who are getting paid more to do it. I get some of the fans are like, man, it stinks we got a good player and he leaves, but you also can get a good player in for a year.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
With fans, it's going to take adjustment, you know, to understand it works both ways. And obviously they're going to overreact when a guy walks out the door and overreact when a new guy comes in. But it's basically for fans. I think they'll adjust like NFL people following free agency. By the way, that 1 year in 60, besides this past one for Michigan, I will never believe that they were better than the Cornhuskers that year. That's just something I've taken from my childhood or my young adulthood.
They had Charles Woodson.
But that Nebraska team played Peyton Manning in Tennessee at the Orange Bowl and whipped them good. So I don't know.
I agree.
I think too, Dan, and see what you think about this. I think there's a way around the employment aspect of it while also taking care of these guys contractually. Like if you're a freelance entertainer and you can 1099. Most of those gigs are 1099. You know,
correct.
They're responsible.
And there's contracts. Right.
And there's contracts. And you can take care of the guys that way. I think things like health insurance should have been taken care of a long time ago. Long time health insurance. It's a tragedy that, I mean, with all the money they make, that they wouldn't take care of that with all the issues with health and CTE and all that good stuff. So I think there's ways around that. Unionization, you know, state by state, that gets hard. Some states it's very positive, some states it's not. And I think that's part of the problem is, you know, if the entire – all of college football is based in Illinois, New York, and California, you could unionize with ease, right? Other states, you know, they're kind of – there's a lot of different
– it's literally illegal. It's illegal.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different
– to unionize in certain states.
Yeah.
And so –
NFL can get by with it because they have some stuff. But, you know, you hit the nail on the head, too, with the courts. That's what I can't wrap my head around. People say guardrails, and I'm like, okay, that's good. You know, even the playing field, you know, competitive things to ensure competitive balance. But unlike the NFL, the minute you limit, it's going to go to the courts. You know, I think you'd agree that this sport has gotten litigation happy. You know, I mean, I thought that the – limiting transfers to one time unless you're a grad transfer was a smart move as far as some of the roster transition. It went to court and got tossed immediately. You know, so think about that. So my final question with all that is how does college sports overcome the litigation and not just win with their rules and all the schools but win in the courts? And you're right, that Kavanaugh opinion was you know, part of a unanimous decision by the Supreme Court. I mean, it's not like, you know, no matter what your political leanings are, that they all agree on this. So, you know, how do they win there? And I'll throw it to you and let you make the point.
They all agree. And honestly, that document is one of the most important things that has ever been written about college sports. And almost nobody talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys have and all that, but like read that thing. It is like, you're done. You read that, and that's why we're litigation happy. You want to get rid of litigation? Get rid of the guardrails. Stop trying to do guardrails. Let it play. Let's see.
We haven't. We don't talk about it specifically. We always just talk about the 9-0, just how resounding that was.
Yeah, and there are a lot of. I thought that was like a rare one because you always hear like it's going to be the Democrats on the side. There's actually a lot of 9-0s, which I didn't know until a few years ago. But yeah, it's 9-0. They're all looking at this like, yeah, whatever. Half the judges are like, why would we even rule on this? This is right. Like this doesn't even merit argument. But yeah, it is a damning statement, and that's why when I would listen to these hearings, and I'm not talking about the Saban one, I'm just talking about generally, we've had all these hearings, and guys are like, well, what we need to do is set up a rule. We do this and that. And you're like, dude, and then you go, well, what about? Or when you talk to coaches, well, what you're going to lose in this? Oh, I don't know anything about the legal stuff. Okay, well, that's great. Guess who does? Brett Kavanaugh. He's yeah. not going anywhere, right? Like, you're not going to get this done unless you go to Congress. But I'll give you one on this, on the transfer, because I 100% agree, right? The transfer portal is the NCAA's own creation. And they used to allow coaches to abuse where kids wanted to go. And they could put, remember, they could put blocks on kids. You were prohibited from transferring to any school in the conference, our arch rival, anyone on our schedule. There were times kids would get 30 to 40 schools they would be blocked from attending in college football. So now you like there's 60 teams, right? They overplayed it, and then they responded by coming up with this, let's be nice. It was well-intentioned. Let's have a waiver process where we're going to allow, hey, if there's a good reason, someone should be able to transfer home. So the idea is like, look, kid from Miami, Florida goes to Ohio State, but then his mom is sick and he wants to transfer. Okay, good reason, right? Let's let the kid play, whatever. Well, then we went into the what we like to call on our podcast the Uncle Dialysis era, where everybody had a sick relative, and everybody all of a sudden, I got to drive Uncle Jim over to the dialysis clinic every day. I got to turn, and you're like, you're transferred to Florida State. You live in Miami. Like Uncle Jim ain't even here. Like what? How is this working? But then they just said, okay, everyone can go. So it was well-intentioned, but here's the danger that the NCAA is in, and this is what I would go to Congress on. This is like an issue I would go to Congress on. I would try to pass really specific things. If you think of the Sherman Anti-Trust Act and you think of restraint of trade, and now we have kids, the NCAA has granted 9 years of eligibility and things like that, right? These crazy cases. You finish your 4 or 5 years. They need to have a law that says you can play 5 years and that's it. Something like that, like a federal law, because that's what you could try to protect and get an exemption from the antitrust. Because otherwise, let's say I finish my fourth year, right? And I say, well, I want to be a grad transfer. So I'm going to leave school X and I'm going to go to a school Y and I'm going to get a accounting major, master's, and I'm going to play a year of football. And with NIL, I'm a good quarterback, but I'm not an NFL quarterback, right? I'm one of these guys, I don't know, hey, this school's going to offer me $600,000 to go be their quarterback next year. Okay, I do it. Well, if I then get as long as I pass my classes and I'm in academic good standing, why can't I just get another major? Why can't I get another master's degree at this school for another $600? Or I transfer over here, they're going to pay me $700, but I'm going to get a master's in education or something like that. If you say, well, you're out of eligibility, you're now restraining my trade. You're telling me I can't work. And now you've run in foul on this. And I think every person, and so you could have people playing college football for 6, 8, 10, like 12 years, right? Because you're making a good living and you just keep getting educated. And that's what they should really be. Mm-hmm. These are the types of things I think you worry about because you go, well, you know what? They act like none of us want to see that, right? We don't need like 31-year-old quarterbacks. Who've been around for 10 years, you want to see the new kids get a chance. That's not college athletics. I think everybody would agree. But you can also look and go, they kind of got a point on restraint of trade. This is a dangerous spot. So I would rather focus on really small issues that are very specific issues that could become big than stand around and go, well, I want to pay them, but I don't want them to be paid. And like even the 1099, I agree, but that's still a sense of employment. Or how do I do this? How do we protect if the courts are going to rule these guys employees, and they probably will, It's fine if the Alabama football team gets minimum wage or whatever they're going to pay him per hour. But a Division III school cannot afford to have their volleyball team getting paid minimum wage 20 hours a week, all like their entire athletic. So how do we carve out and say Division III athletes don't count as employees or something like that? Because no one wants to see Division III sports get like have to shut down because the schools get. So there's lots of practical things, and I think what we've spent too much time in the last 3 years, this is why I just say no guardrails, let's see what happens. And I think it's what's happening has been great. I think the sports, I understand the coaches are complaining and they have big voices, but as a fan, I think it's been thrilling. I think it's been exciting. There's new blood. There's new chances. You're not just sitting there going, okay, same three teams going to win the championship this year or same six basketball teams. But I think that until we get to we let that play out. But that's what I would do rather than I think coaches who have very powerful voices going, this isn't how I want to do it. I don't like it. Whatever. I don't really like it either, but that's not reality. We have to move on to what's real.
I want to pivot here to something else that is highly controversial, but not in the – this is not going to a courtroom anytime soon. Maybe it will. Heck, I don't know. But your cohort, Ross Dellinger, is early as this morning, and he's been working on this for a while now, the playoff, which we thought we had it with 12. Now there's talk of 14. And then it becomes, well, how many are automatic bids, and then how is the money distributed? This is not a minor story, and it's almost like, a news dump Friday in the middle of March Madness. Mm. But this is major because if you're not in the SEC Big Ten, this is one more extra push for you to get the hell out of Dodge, because this is from Ross, again, of Yahoo Sports, your familiar employer. The CFP new revenue model is expected to look like this, and we're talking millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. SEC and Big Ten get 29%. The ACC gets 17%. The Big 12 gets 14. The Group 5 gets 9. Notre Dame has their own source of revenue. They get 1, but again, they've got the NBC deal, of course. How are the other conferences going to view this if that winds up being kind of the gospel of how we distribute the money from the playoff?
Well, I think it's going to – I think it either is or going to be. It's either been agreed to or about to be. Okay. Yeah, they don't like it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
Not surprisingly. I don't like it either, and it's not because the SEC and the Big Ten wouldn't have earned that amount of money anyway. They almost assuredly will. But if you take the way basketball works – everybody who gets into all 68 teams earn one share of revenue, one slice of the pie for their conference. And that money goes to the conference and pool. So you got six SEC teams in. Okay. Then four of them win in the first round. They get another piece of every time you basically tip off, you get another share of the revenue. And if those four advance again, you get another four and then two and whatever it gets down to the end. That's the revenue. So you earn your share of revenue. And they could do that in the football playoff. I think that makes total sense, right? The more you win, the more money you get. What the SEC and the Big Ten wanted to do was look historically and then just say, we're going to get this amount, so let's just codify it and write it in, and we're just getting it, even if we don't earn it. I don't see a world where they don't earn it anyway. So it's not really that big of a deal, but it's the sentiment behind it is we're getting this, you're not. And even if, let's say Florida State and Clemson both get into the CFP and they win all their games and they meet in the championship game, the ACC is not getting the revenue that they would have earned under what I think is a fair way to do this. I think the basketball way is a fair way to do this. So what it does is it serves as a way to continue to destabilize these other leagues and basically say to Florida State, Clemson, anyone else, like, you got to get out of there. The problem with a couple of those teams getting out of there is other teams are going to get left behind. Someday maybe the Big Ten and the SEC contract, which is another bit that people should be worried about. But I personally, I just don't like it because it's just like, let's just earn it on the field. But it's a big thing. I think college sports is best when it's a truly national pursuit. I would rather we had more conferences rather than less. I wish we had scheduling agreements or things like that that could have, you know, say, gotten Texas and Oklahoma to play more SEC games, but not just, you know, not really weaken the Big 12 or and cause the end of the Pac-12 conference to exist, the Big East conference to exist. I think there are better ways to do it than this. Very, it's very like we're, it's like pirate ship stuff right now, right? Or it's corporate raiding each other. And I don't think it's good for college sports. I like all of it. I get in a boardroom. They're like, hey man, we're making more money and we get all the power. That's fine. But I like when Baylor and TCU play, right? I like Iowa State. I like it. I like college football. I like college basketball. I want all of it.
And is TV driving it? The same people that brought us the Real Housewives of New Jersey are deciding exactly. This. Yeah. No offense to Mike, who makes a good living in TV. And Mike, we all understand that TV drives the whole thing.
You I thought you were going to say no offense to me. I'm a big fan of Real Housewives of New Jersey. I had to wait a minute. I'm going to lose all my street cred. That's not true. I don't watch the show.
I want to jump back to something very interesting you said. And it kind of goes along with a little nugget I picked up from somebody the other day that floored me. Contraction. Is that a possibility right here from where you stand, the Big Ten and SEC actually removing teams? Could that be something that you
not
you,
now
you see happening? Not now, but not, could you
but
see
yeah.
that happening?
UCLA, USC, Oregon, and Washington are in the Big Ten. Okay. I don't think we can – like there's no limits to the imaginations at this point of like what the heck is that? If I had come on this, you know, we had talked 5 years ago and I was, or, you know, 10 years ago and said, hey, that's going to happen. You're like, that's not possible. Oh no, it's happened. If everything is about grabbing revenue, that's why I said the sentiment behind guaranteeing the money. If you're confident, if I'm the SEC, I'm confident I'm going to earn the money. They have the best football conference. They have the most great teams. They are set up to do very well in the playoff because they have numerous real contenders. The Big Ten, I don't think, generally speaking, the Big Ten has only had one team that could really compete at a national level. Now, Michigan was there with Harbaugh. We'll see if they can stay, maybe Oregon. But they're not. I mean, the SEC's got, now you had Texas and Oklahoma, probably 8-9 teams, right, that can have legitimate shots at making playoff runs. So, they're going to earn their money. It's just when your sentiment is let's control the money, at what point, if it's always about more money, does Alabama and Georgia and these schools look up at Ohio State and Michigan and go, what are we doing here, right? Why are you dragging along Indiana football or what, you know, what different teams that haven't ever really been any good? Why are you funding that? Let's just take it all for ourselves. Well, I think that's soon. No. Are there other aspects in play? Yes. You know, there's research. There's a $10 billion research thing in the Big Ten and different stuff. But to think it's that type of stuff is – look, Big Ten added Rutgers because they could bring the basic cable subscribers of New Jersey, Real Housewives fans or not. But that's because they wanted the Big Ten network. They added New Jersey for that. Well, as cord cutting goes on, what is Rutgers' purpose?
None.
Right?
Same with Maryland. The
Maryland,
BC and
too.
Baltimore
yeah.
market.
What's yeah. the purpose of you being in here? Do they sit there? Does the next generation of guy who – what we're seeing is you still see a Greg Sankey. You still see a Jim Phillips at the ACC that come up through college sports the whole way. Big Ten's last two guys have come from, you know, the NFL, Major League Baseball, TV world. You see it in the Big 12. Like, these guys are in, and they may be like, I'm going to make a couple deals and I'm going back. I want to be a commissioner. I want to run a team. Like, these aren't guys that are looking and going, what's the 40-year future of the sport? It's like, no, I just increased your profits 400% and I'm out. They don't really care. You know, they may not have that same sensibility. So I think the fans of, like, and I'm not saying they are, but like, if you're at the lower level of these leagues and you're like, yeah, screw the ACC, who cares? We're going to make more money. Like, careful who you're, you know, those are still wolves over there. They'll eat them, yeah. And, you know.
that car to root for someone's demise, whether it's a program or a league. And on that subject, I mean, with Florida State, I keep saying, and you obviously have a good hold on the legalese of all this. I keep saying if they had the loophole to get out of that deal, they would have already been out of that deal. They've been trying for years. Clearly, it hasn't happened. Now, if they're hell-bent on just saying, damned with guaranteed TV money, we're going to get out of here anyway. If that happens, and of course, they still have to find a landing spot, which I don't know if they really have one. But if that happens, then what for the ACC, a once very proud conference that has had some runs with Clemson, with Florida State? They were hoping Miami would be relevant again. That hasn't happened. But what are we looking at there?
I don't know. I mean, an unfortunate situation.
Yeah, I don't think they know either.
Yeah, I don't think they know either. And one thing we've seen about teams that leave conferences that are having success one place and go to another conference, it doesn't necessarily carry over.
Nebraska
being our big example. A lot of other schools, all those the Big East schools, right?
Like my God.
Go back 10, 15 years ago, Big East football was fun.
Yeah.
And I know, like, I guess this is my – I'm pretty practical, but there are times I get like idealistic, like everybody else. And like, yeah, they weren't the best teams, but West Virginia, Rutgers, Boston College, Pitt, Virginia Tech, like they were playing at Syracuse. They're playing these games on Thursday nights, and it was just fun. Louisville, right?
Now
all of them are in these bigger leagues, and none of them are winning.
And the mighty Hurricanes have won. They were in the worst until they did away with divisions. They're in the worst division in college football for almost 16 years, and they won it once.
Yeah.
They probably got their own problems, but
they've had other issues.
They were better off in the Big East, though.
But it worked, right? It worked. And so everyone goes, well, now we're going to make more money. And it's like, well, if I'm a fan, I want to win.
How is UCLA going to go to Wisconsin?
I don't see Gonzaga fans cry, like Gonzaga basketball fans, right? Yeah. What a fun team to root for. Mm-hmm. Imagine living in Spokane, Washington, and you got this team, and you get your tickets, and you follow this team 25 years. You guys win 25 games and you compete for national titles and all that. And someone says, hey, we should go to the Pac-12. We'll have more money. Like, are you going to lower my ticket prices?
Right.
But it doesn't work the same way, right?
Yep.
I want to win as a fan. I don't want to be like, yeah, we're at the bottom of this league, but our AD's office just got remodeled for the third time. In 5 years, like, who cares? Like, this isn't fun. And some of it's like, you know, you could college sports could be fun at each level. You watched it this week with the early conference championships, right? Mm-hmm. They win the Horizon and they're hugging and crying. They win the Metro Atlantic. They win the MAC up in Cleveland this weekend. Like, these matter to those fans and these players and these coaches. And who the heck cares whether they're going to, like, who cares if they go and can beat Kentucky or not? It's not that important. Like, there's levels to this, and I feel like we're just getting to this is the part of the professionalization that is, to me, very damaging. It's not that this recruit went to this school because of a collective. That kid's still playing college football. Or this guy transferred, or Michigan was able to pay enough that Blake Corum came back for a senior year instead of being a fourth round draft pick. And like, to me, I was like, hey, great. Like, I don't know if you saw this, but like we had a trend of 7 years where the average was 115 players, the juniors were going pro every year in college football. They were giving up their eligibility after 3 years, they're going pro. And the high was like 135. This year was 58. Only 58. And 25 of them are first round grades. So it's only like 30 guys that don't have first round grades. I mean, no one's expecting Caleb Williams to come back, right? Marvin Harrison Jr. These guys are going, you know what? I love college football. Now I'm making a little bit of money. The Ohio State teams, they're almost all coming back. I want to try to win a championship for my guys. I want to do a legacy here. I want to keep getting classes to my, whatever it is, you're seeing the players want to stay and do this. And so it's like, there's some just benefits to all of this. And I think NIL is not the stuff that it's causing coaches headaches, but it's not hurting the sport. I enjoyed watching Blake Corum play football. He's a good football player, right?
Yeah.
He's right. Michigan was an excellent team. It was a new team to come in and do well. And so I don't see that as a problem. What I see as a problem is nothing matters but money. Let's have less conferences. Let's tell Washington State and Oregon State you don't matter anymore. And at some point, we're going to tell these high schools you don't matter. That's the stuff that rattles me and bothers me, not whether our kids at one school or another school, because what we've actually seen with the talent is it's flattening out, not all spiking to some super team.
Yeah, it tears at the regionalism of the sport. I mean, the magical thing about college football is it can take place in downtown Los Angeles or Starkville, Mississippi.
Yep.
Speaking of Los Angeles, I mean, look, I'm assuming you've watched UCLA through the years, and I'm assuming in your travels to cover the sport, you've been to Iowa City in November, mm-hmm. you've been to Madison in November, mm-hmm. You've seen those teams on the line of scrimmage, offensively especially. SC, I think, can recruit their way out of it. I just don't – I think the Los Angeles schools competitively are in trouble because it's such a different style of play.
Different style of play.
They're going to get beat up.
They have to repurpose the program a little bit. But let me say this, though. Like, there's 36 million people living in California. No offense to Cal and Stanford, new ACC members. But there's basically two places to play football if you don't want to leave the state. There's LA County alone. And I don't know how many people here know that much about Southern California, but LA County is just one of the counties. It's San Diego County, it's San Bernardino County, it's Orange County. But LA County alone is bigger than 41 states in mm-hmm. population. There's a lot of players there. Now, they don't have the linemen and things like that, but if USC and UCLA could just stop the just drainage of players who are flying out of Southern California and sell them on, you get to play in front of your family, stay home, we're now in the Big Ten, there's at least hope that you can do that. Now, I agree with you. Right now, Chip Kelly just – Jim Kelly just took the Ohio State.
Out of there.
Yeah, like if you're buying stock in a company and the CEO just bails to take a demotion somewhere else, don't buy that stock. I'm not a trained financial advisor, but I'm just personal advice. Maybe talk to one. So clearly Chip Kelly was like, yeah, it ain't going to work. This ain't going to work. So they have a hard go. But there's a little bit of an example there of what we're talking about. Congrats, UCLA. You're going to have more money. I don't know if you've ever been to UCLA. But it is one of the most spectacular campuses and places you'll ever go.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Now, if you get some of these Midwestern recruits to fly out there and see it and go, well, I was at Iowa City last week. They don't got this, right? Maybe you can change it. But it's a total, like, great, you just got more money. No one was walking around UCLA going, boy, if only this place got a couple bucks behind it, we would do all right. Who's getting the money? Who's getting the money? I'm a UCLA football fan. I'm like, great, we're going to get our brains beat in? How is this better? What did we get out of this?
Years from now, we're going to look at history will say UCLA has got to be one of the greatest underachievers in the sport. And I don't know why or how. I've always heard from alums like Randy Cross is here in Atlanta, and he's always complained that he just didn't want to spend money. Then Chip gets there, and apparently they were spending more money, but they still just cannot get over the hump. But one of those schools, particularly my money would be on Southern Cal, has to become relevant again, which I think would be good for the sport. If you want some geographical balance, it can't just be one region of the country dominating. Michigan breaks that spell for a little, but you look at the map over the last 15 national champions, and it's a pretty scary small part of the map that is winning all the titles. Dan, as we let you sign off here, I mentioned the podcast College Football Inquirer, something I listen to. Enjoy your guys' work on that. Is there anything in particular that you plan on talking about here on the next one? You do it, what, twice a week?
Twice a week this time of year, three in the season.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do all these issues. We do a lot of issues. We'll get more into football as spring shapes up and things like that. We do some basketball this time of year. As you guys know, if you run a college football show or pot-centric show, it can get a little lean. One of my requests is we could get more like the NFL and spread
Right.
Like, do we have to have the transfer portal, all the coaches getting fired, the playoff chase, and the recruiting day all in the same week? Can we just come on, like, work with us here? We're dying to talk about something. They're like, you guys always talk about something negative. Like, give us something.
Yeah, save the playoff news and the new playoff format.
Yeah, right,
like, can we bump that, like, after spring football, maybe put it in June?
I got all June to talk about that. Give me something now. Could signing day be on, like, February 27th?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Give me something, yeah.
I think they're working on that because they're making it a 12-month talking conversational sport, whether you want to or not. Well, some of it's negative, let's be honest. A lot of it is negative, but we're always talking about it. Which I do think that part is certainly good for the sport.
Everything about the NFL is negative, and the NFL is like, I always tell people, because they'll be like, well, you know, we just want positive coverage. I cover the Olympics and get a lot of these smaller sports, and I'm like, if you watch the NFL, everything is negative, and it's the biggest thing in the world. People love controversy. So
they can't get enough. It's their version of the Jerry Springer show in some respects. Dan, you are positive for the sport of college football. Again, really enjoy your work. I can't thank you enough for taking out the time, and hope we can do it again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You got it. Thank you. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, College Football Inquirer, best-selling author of Death to the BCS, amongst other things. There's a lot to unpack there, JC. That's good stuff.
I really enjoyed that interview. Somebody in our chat row mentioned it's the first guest who isn't coming from an SEC echo chamber. I'd push back that there is such a thing. But there is, the better jobs are covering the SEC, right? And all that. Ross may be from the South, but he covers the whole country.
We'll have Andy Staples on next week. He's hardly an SEC echo chamber guy. Ellis wasn't an echo chamber guy. We've had a lot of people on that aren't just SEC. But we have to, SEC, I don't know what. We've got thousands of people. They're not all SEC fans. We have Michigan fans. We have Texas. Texas is now SEC. But there's no question the SEC is going to dominate a lot of the conversation when you're talking college football.
Sure. And much like our friend Tim Brando, I like that.
Definitely
Dan
not an SEC echo chamber guy.
Tim would rather talk about Big East basketball all day.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome. I kind of like the fact Dan covers a little basketball, too, and is covering sports. But you get the comparison and all of that. And he's a guy that doesn't talk with the accent that I talk with. So that's good. If that's what you meant, Quantrill. But I agree. He's a different voice and a unique one, and certainly an accomplished one. So can't think. That's why we went a little long. We'll have the Jay-Z 5 will have to return next week. But
we'll do that next week.
I've got basketball on my brain so much this week. I was going to ask a question about Villanova or something. Or the
goodness!
No, I'm kidding.
We had to keep Dan on another half hour if we start breaking down the brackets. Do want to remind everybody, a couple of things. Number one, we love SitePro Rentals, one of our proud sponsors when renting equipment. Important to have a local, easy-to-do business friend in the industry who carries all the newest equipment, creates efficiency for you and your project, a job site. You can give them a shout at 972-RENT-NOW. That's 972-736-8669. The team at SitePro Rentals has great reliability, service, transparent pricing. That matters. You need to use SitePro Rentals. Again, local, easy to work with business professionals. Can't say enough about the job they do at SitePro. And we'll get into this more the next time, and that is one of our new sponsors, Neston Wild, from the makers of Blue Delta Jeans, Neston Wild, for a mattress, comfortable mattress that can be shipped to your door at a good price, but really like next quality, not kind of just bargain basement where you're going to have to see a chiropractor the next day. They're based in Mississippi, locally owned and operated, and do a terrific, terrific job. That's Neston Wild Mattress. You can check them out online, and we'll have more for you on that when we pick up next week on the show, which will be back in our regular time slot next week. Appreciate everybody tuning in this week on our myriad of formats from YouTube to iTunes to Google Play, Facebook and Twitter, and everything in between. Our producer is Phil Molinax, doing a great job behind the scenes. You can't see him, but trust me, he's there. And he's probably wondering who raided his refrigerator. The answer is J.C. Sherbert. That's the answer to that.
And I just realized I have a typo in my tagline. I misspelled chief.
Oh, you did?
Download the Chiefs Sports app, before the eye. Oh, my God.
Jamie is going to crucify you for that.
I am going to get killed for this, but no.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I tried. I misspelled Norman Dale, so we're even. Yeah, Dale is D-A-L-E, the coach of the Hickory squad in Hoosiers.
You would have thought Dale would have been. Dale, the last name would have been D-A-Y.
It's D-A-L-E.
Crazy so, Midwesterners with last first names for last names.
That's how they rolled back in the 50s in corn country. That's my backdrop here in honor of March Madness. And we'll talk some more about that next week as well and get into a bunch of other stuff here on JC and Morgan. Don't forget to check out the website, jcandmorgan.com. We'll start doing a better job taking care of some listener/viewer mail. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show. That'll do it for us. So long, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to, wait a minute, I know the episode number. I know it, episode number 233 of JC and Morgan. 233, and we're still going strong. We shall see you next week. So long, everybody.